Welcome to the QMEC podcast. I'm Ros Herbert.
And I'm Rini Paul.
I'm here today with Tash, who is a BSc student who is doing the primary care BSc at the moment. And I wanted everyone to hear from her because I think she is doing an amazing thing by working at one of the vaccine hubs. So Tash, just tell us a bit more about what you're doing at the moment.
So at the moment, as you said, I'm a medical student doing the primary care IBSC. All throughout this pandemic, I felt pretty frustrated that I couldn't really directly help. I mean, obviously, I've been staying at home and I know that that's playing my part, but I really wanted to step up a bit and directly try and improve the situation. In the first lockdown, I was working for volunteering for a PPE charity called Med Supply Drive UK, and that was really rewarding, especially when so many doctors and healthcare professionals were struggling trying to get a hold of PPE. And I was back home in Bristol with my parents, so I didn't really want to be leaving the house and exposing them to potentially coronavirus. In the latest sort of period since the vaccine has been approved and coming out in the UK, I have been working at Dr. Hearn's GP practice in North London and actually being involved with giving the vaccine and sort of the administration side of it. At the moment, our average is about 600 a day. And then this weekend coming, we're stepping it up to 1,000 a day. It's a lot of people. And I was really impressed the first day I went there. It's super organized and it's really efficient, but it's definitely a bit of a machine getting people in and out. As we were doing the first JCVI group and the sort of over 80s, they were obviously coming in and it was snowing outside, so they were wrapped up in all of their layers. The bit that takes the longest time is getting all the layers off so you can actually get to their arm. And of course, like, a lot of these people haven't left their house in a year now, and they're really lonely and isolated, so they just want to have like a conversation with you. And so getting the balance between having a little chit chat and getting them out the door is quite an experience. Right. But I think it's preparing me for 10-minute appointments in GP later on.
So it sounds like you're really enjoying this experience. Do you feel part of the team there?
Definitely. It's really nice. We have sort of a meeting in the morning before we start, explaining the day and what we've got to do and sorting out who's going where. There's also lots of volunteers who have nothing to do with healthcare, but for different reasons, just want to help out. So they're more doing observing the observation room when people have their 15 minutes waiting period, sort of directing patients where to go and doing some of the admin side of it. So it's really nice that it's not all just healthcare professionals. And there's a lot of medical students, mainly final year medical students, but some medical students from the primary care IBSC course. And it's a really nice environment. I'd say it's probably the nicest sort of, I know it's not technically one of my placements, but it's the nicest sort of placement environment I've ever had. Mm. I think because I feel like I'm actually contributing rather than just sort of tagging on and shadowing somebody. So that's nice. And I think one of the things is they made it very clear that we can ask questions. We have walkie-talkies in each room, so we can just radio Russell and ask him, you know, if anybody has an allergy to anything, if we're unsure whether this person should be getting a vaccine. So that's nice. And that makes us feel a lot more confident, I think. On the whole, people are so grateful, but also there's a lot of misinformation out there. And there are people that turn up and are, you know, unsure whether they want the vaccine even or not. And people who, you know, believe some of this misinformation. So it's a good experience to try and explain to them sort of what my knowledge of the vaccine is and like the efficacy and sort of some of the potential side effects. There's a lot of communication skills, definitely. I think the actual sort of injecting the vaccine is only the one tiny part of it. But yeah, explaining the side effects. And also some people come in and they have a preference over whether they want the Pfizer one or the AstraZeneca one. And of course, we can't give patients a choice. And so if they come in and they're expecting the other one and only want the other one, it's quite interesting, like asking them why and then trying to sort of explain to them, but obviously still giving them the choice whether they don't have to have it, but helping them to sort of weigh up the risks versus the benefits. For example, I have one patient with quite a few allergies to pork products. And so trying to explain that there was no pork or pork related products in the vaccine and explaining to her how many people have actually had like an adverse side effect. Explaining the sort of benefits and the risks if she was to get coronavirus because she was over 70, she has some other comorbidities. So that's quite interesting. Definitely uses my brain a bit.
Absolutely. So have you had anyone come in for appointment and, you know, leave without having had it?
Yeah, I was quite surprised that I thought that people who sort of once they got to the actual vaccination room, they would have sort of considered the information, spoken to their own GP before turning up. And we've had a few a day rejecting it after they get there, sometimes because they want the other vaccine, sometimes because they just wanted to hear all the information and then make the decision. Most people who have done that have been polite about it. And I can kind of understand where they're coming from. You know, some of them have had previous anaphylactic reactions to a medicine or something. So they are quite fearful and I do get it, but also trying to explain the risk of that happening versus the risk of them getting coronavirus and becoming really poorly is what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, that's quite advanced communication skills, isn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously you want to make sure that your patient autonomy, that you're not sort of telling them they have to have this vaccine because obviously that's not right, but also making sure that they understand sort of the numbers side of it, saying yes, there is a risk that you may have an anaphylactic reaction, but how small that chance is compared to the larger chance of you getting coronavirus is what I've been trying to do, and making sure that I've got full consent after that to give them the vaccine.
What would you say to any GPs listening who've got students on placements? How can they get them involved in the vaccine hub? I know that you're actually vaccinating, but I know that not every hub will allow that.
How we're doing it is we've got, in every clinical room, we've got one person giving the vaccine and sort of getting consent and explaining side effects and checking allergies. And then we've got another person in the room putting the information on the computer system. I think medical students like to feel that they're actually helping rather than just being an annoying nuisance, kind of just hanging around. So I think that's a way of them sort of still being in a clinical environment, but actually doing something useful. So we have sort of people that are in charge of patient flow. So obviously there's a large number of people coming into the practice, sometimes 1,000 people a day, and obviously trying to ensure social distancing and wiping down all the chairs after every person. It's a massive operation. So there's a lot of sort of patient communication roles available that medical students could do. I've noticed that I've become a lot more confident since being in the vaccination centre, just because of the volume of patients I'm speaking to of all backgrounds and, you know, education levels. Some of them are really clued up about the vaccines, some aren't. Some want to know all about how the vaccines were made, some just want you to inject them.
And I know that you've been doing some work for students around mental health. Tell us a bit more about that.
So I have a couple of social media pages. So I have an Instagram page and a YouTube account where I talk about my own experience with mental health illnesses such as depression and generalized anxiety disorder. And I try and sort of normalize the conversation around it and advocate for people to reach out for help. Try and break these stigmas that unfortunately are still around. You know, people think that once, if they have to take medication for their mental health, they'll be sort of addicted to antidepressants. People think that sort of talking therapies like CBT are just sort of chatting to a friend or just, you know, talking about the past and not really sort of productive, which is not true. I think there's a lot of fear, especially amongst medical students, about the GMC and having a mental health illness. They're confused about what fit to practice actually means and whether they will be deemed as unfit to practice if they have a mental health illness.
Yeah.
And I think people don't know where to seek help. Obviously, you know, speaking to your GP is really important, but I recently made a post on all the different charities and support lines available because there are a lot of them. What I found from my Google search, you know, the BMA has a support line. There's so many different charities and organizations that have been set up. I want healthcare professionals to know and students to know that just because they're going into this role where they're caring for others, they're allowed to be the patient as well.
Mm.
You can't be a good doctor or healthcare professional until you sort of prioritized your own health.
Yes.
It's like putting on your own life jacket first. So yeah, I just try and encourage people to do that and to know that you can also get better. I think there's a lot of stigma. So I had my first psychiatry placement last year in third year, and there was a lot of stigma amongst medical students that people with mental illnesses don't ever get better. And so I kind of wanted to show, look, I was severely depressed, I had suicidal thoughts, but by seeing my GP, taking antidepressants, doing 2 or 3 rounds of CBT and speaking to the wonderful charity, The Listening Place. It's a charity based in Victoria in London. I think they only support people in London who are experiencing suicidal thoughts. They're all volunteers and they have a couple of sort of psychiatrists that oversee it, but they're all trained and basically it's just somebody to listen to you. I've always been really open with talking about my mental health, but one thing I really struggled with was talking about the suicidal thoughts, because naturally it just made my parents or my boyfriend really upset.
They panicked.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I think every time I mentioned that, it was kind of like, oh, let's call an ambulance, let's take you to hospital kind of thing. So it was nice to, obviously it was a serious time, but it was nice to be able to talk to the volunteer there. I just want people to know that by seeking help, you can get better and it does get better. Because I was on, although, you know, I knew it was possible, I think having like almost a role model to tell me, look, yeah, it can get better would have been really helpful for me.
What do you think the GP tutors can do to help support the students more?
First of all, it is really difficult. I think a lot of people are missing out on that social interaction and sort of, so whether it's just, you know, setting up a Zoom call to with a coffee and cup of tea to chat about life, for some people that might not help, but if it just helps one person in your sort of group who, you know, is living on their own, hasn't seen their parents, you know, a lot of the international students haven't seen their parents in over a year.
Gosh.
I think that would really help people just to have a chat, which sounds so simple. Telling them that you're aware of how many students are struggling. You can open up and say, you know, you're finding it hard too, if you are, and just break down that kind of, I'm the doctor, I'm perfect. I don't think that many GPs have that. But, you know, I think it's, I think it's okay for you to just say, you know, it's a really hard time. I'm missing my friends. Mm. And then, you know, maybe somebody else will say, yeah, I'm missing my family too. I mean, sometimes if you open up yourself, people will then find it easier to say something back, like, oh, me too. Speaking and saying, look, there are counsellors at King's, and telling people that they can still seek that. You know, you may think it's obvious and people know, but I don't think all medical students do know that. And sort of talking to your students about what they can do to look after their mental health. I think one thing that's always frustrated me is from a young age, we're always told to eat our 5 portions of fruit and veg, drink our 2 litres of water, get some exercise for physical health. But we're never taught about how to look after our mental health, which I've had to kind of learn over the last 2 years, whether that's mindfulness or, you know, do it. So for me, I absolutely love doing puzzles. They're my thing. They just take my brain off absolutely everything. Or, you know, a sort of detailed colouring thing, anything that like takes your mind off all your stressful and unhelpful thoughts. Just sharing ideas like that, really, and just helping them to accept that it's been a really difficult year and it's okay to not be okay, the cliche sentence.
And some of our tutors are doing group sort of tutorials. I know all the second year tutors are. Any ideas of how to make those a bit more social online?
I think what you do is really good. You ask everyone to turn their cameras on. I think that's really
important.
I think when the cameras go off, it's just like people will, you know, pick up their phone or something, maybe. Mm. You'll get the odd Wi-Fi excuse, but don't believe that. I think, you know, having group discussions, it depends how big your group is, but I think, you know, discussions maybe up to 10 people in the same room is good. People don't like to sort of direct questions at people because they think that's mean. I think some people sometimes need a bit of a prompt to say, oh, do you have any thoughts on this, Tash, for example? Don't ask them really hard questions on the spot, but if it's just sort of sharing your thoughts, just sort of ask people and make it more of a discussion.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely absolutely not the expert on that.
How are you finding this lockdown a bit easier? You don't have to say yes.
I think since vaccinating, yes. Before that, no. For me personally, the first lockdown, although it was a horrible time for so many people, it was a bit of a blessing in disguise for me, for my mental health, and just sort of taking a step back from medicine, prioritizing, you know, going for a walk, being with my parents. It was just really nice. And I think sort of for a lot of people, that rest and being at home, and I always felt, oh, it's a Friday night, it's a Saturday night, I should be doing something. And not having that pressure was quite nice. Whereas I think now people have had that time at home and that relaxation period, and now I think boredom is really setting in, and I think sort of repetitiveness of things is becoming a bit mundane. I think people just miss their friends and seeing them and being around people. Medical students, one of the main reasons they've gone into medicine is because they're a people person, in air quotes. Yeah, they like that, you know, they're kind of extroverted. They don't want to sit in an office or work from home. They're potentially struggling a bit more.
Thank you. That's great. And I hope it will give our tutors some ideas. I'm sure it will.